Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, always pray, never the predator, Williams.
Well, that's not great, but hey.
Everybody's trying to catch him. Like a Pokemon. We got a great show in store, as we also have with us intern slash part-timer slash stenographer slash coffee bringer who brings no coffee slash I need to be nicer to slash wink wink slash Amy.
The slashes are getting more and more aggressive every
week. You keep making these things happen. I mean,
wink wink slash, for God's sake, wink wink?
For,
that
for
sounds
God's sake,
like a terrible fanfic.
Spencer is the one who brought us coffee today.
I did not get coffee.
Well, that's your fault.
No, it's not. Safety in numbers. And I brought
Do you know why?
I brought you coffee this morning.
Do you know why?
I brought him coffee this morning.
Coffee is for closers. We have another exciting episode, as we're going to be talking about the recently dropped Hulu film, and that is the Predator prequel, Prey. So stick around as we dive into that and get into those to that conversation. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and our Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can catch all of our great content over on our website at filmlosophers.com. We got over 300 episodes allegedly stemming from anime, action, romance, comedy, conversations about the industry. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website to listen for more filmlosophers.com. You can also catch us on any podcast streaming platform such as iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, anywhere where your heart's desire is looking, we are there. Check us out. Give us a subscribe, The Filmlosophers. Even let us know how we're doing. We'd love to know your thoughts. Love to know where you're listening from. I'm pretty sure we got folks from all over, so anybody who chimes in with their name and where they're from, we'd love to hear it. So we're also on socials. We'll give you the links at the end of the show. We have a great show in store, but there was something that we did want to talk about before we started this episode. Movie news sucks nowadays.
Understatement.
Because it seems like if you're not talking about a psychotic superhero performer who is going on crazy benders and breaking into people's houses
and starting cults
and
or stealing children.
If you're not talking about,
okay, I feel like I am not paying attention.
It's okay, I'll catch up later.
It's been all, like, she has not said anything not false. Like, everything she says is right on the money. If it's either talking about that or talking about things that are like, it's a really thin movie news week this week, and I'm pretty sure it's been like that for the last couple of weeks, because if it's just been slow. And even on top of that, most of the movie news that is not pertaining to those types of in those particular categories is movie news that's kind of like, it's we've kind of known about that. It's great. Like, Amy mentioned that Paramount is apparently wanting to do a Baby Shark movie.
6 years late.
6 years late, and it's a feature-length film, animated film from Nickelodeon and Paramount Plus. But it gets even better because Baby Shark is going to move with his family to the big city, and he has to survive without his, like, his friend William, where he meets an evil pop star starfish named Starina.
Named Katy Perry?
No, named Starina. And I am taking offense because Starina is the name of Nathan Lane's character, onstage performing character in The Birdcage. So I'm salty about that, first off. And secondly, it is a hot trash mess of being like, hey, do you remember do-do-do-do-do-do?
I have no idea what you're just saying right there, because that didn't even sound remotely
close. Exactly. I'm not getting copyright infringed on this.
It's one of those things where it's like, I mean, there isn't anything new coming out for the hot presses for movies nowadays. Like, you got stuff, people are announcing stuff for future things. Like, everybody's excited. A lot of my friends in the press circuits are getting excited because they're getting their credentials in, or they're getting confirmed for their credentials for D23 coming up in September. Aww. That's cool. And then you got folks who are talking about things that are coming out later down the month. October, they're talking about Orlando or Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights, which is going to be cool. They talked about like some of the new exhibitions and things like that.
But that's not movies.
That's not movies.
That's all theme park related. And if we're doing theme park related, they just announced, I think today, the two producers or directors, Bert and Bertie, from the Hawkeye series is attached officially now to the Big Thunder Mountain movie, which has been in production and was a comic book for ages, but is now maybe going to be in production in like a year?
The thing is this. I'm not hoping that like something bad happens in Hollywood, but it's Hollywood. Something is always happening. And this seems like either people of the press or whatever are either just not really caring anymore, and it's like, whatever, so-and-so's at it again, or, you know, Ariana Grande's talking about this, or blah, 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 is doing that, or Pete Davidson broke up with so-and-so, or whatever, whatever, whatever. Like, it's becoming so mundane, I think, maybe? I don't know, because there's just... the only thing that I'm actually excited for that's technically movie news is... the announcement of that Guillermo del Toro's horror anthology series series that he's going to be putting on Netflix, which looks really cool. And they announced one of the stories I was going to be in is actually a well-known horror story that we're going to see come to life. But it's really bad out there. And I feel like as much as I want to present like proper news, like I was telling you guys before we went on the air, I'm like, I'd rather come out with a conversation and talk about this than pose it as news and it being like 2 weeks old. Like we were mentioning before we went on, the information about Giancarlo Esposito talking about Marvel and this and that. And, oh, he wanted to be in this and that. But it's like, that was like a couple weeks ago. I mean, at least a week ago. And it's not really new or fresh. And to be quite frank, if he joins, he joins. If he doesn't, you know, eh. I mean, we are so inundated with so many different people who want to be a part of this franchise. I don't think it's like breaking news anymore. Hmm. I mean, we had that whole Channing Tatum wanted to be Gambit, and, you know, Taron Egerton wants to be Wolverine, and we have all these different people. No offense to Giancarlo Esposito. He's a great guy. I've interviewed him. He's really fun. He's really, you know, he's a really down-to-earth guy, but it's not that kind of big news to me. And so when I think about news, I think about like breaking things or like, within this past week, there hasn't been a lot. I mean, other than sad news, and I don't want to delve into like sad news with Anne Hesh passing away, things like that. It's not kind of how I want to take the vibe for this. Hmm. I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
I think first off, everyone's going to be in Marvel at some point, unless you have like, you know,
right.
Like, even the person who's like, I'll never be in a Marvel movie.
The club
Disney
is
come after you.
The club is actually going to be the people who aren't in Marvel. It's like tag. The last person to get tagged, or hide and seek. Last person to be found is actually the name of the game.
Yeah. So we can speculate about who's going to be in Marvel, but like, I have a feeling they're going to be around long enough to where that's not going to be really a conversation. Like, everyone's going to show up. But you know what a good conversation is? Where's all the new movies?
Yes.
Like
the original new movies that aren't on Lifetime and super sketchy?
I'm not even counting Lifetime.
I mean, Christmas
Lifetime
is
doesn't
coming.
Technically count.
Christmas is coming, Spencer.
I mean, technically Mariah Carey did sign some deal with Lifetime for something. I don't know.
She also signed things with McDonald's.
Sorry,
but
what's of both of those things? Those are both crazy.
I don't know, but I get what you're saying. Like, we're such in a day where every single movie that seems to come out of a large studio is either Amy was mentioning she was going on about like Cheaper by the Dozen and what was the other one?
It's mostly Cheaper by the Dozen. It's got five officially five movies, and they made a remake of the Steve Martin one. with the guy from Scrubs, which I can never remember.
Zach Braff.
There you go. I like Keith Spencer. Thank you. And I'm like, but why? But why? And the Steve Martin one was good.
Sean and every Levy directed. Every single piece of something that's coming out, especially Disney. Disney's the worst because if you look at it, just about every single movie that they come out that is not already a part of an individual franchise itself is a remake of an original franchise that Disney owns. Cinderella, we got there's like five Cinderella animated movies, and then they made a live action remake. There's four.
Yeah,
but
I was like, hold up,
I'm being
one of the sisters gets married. Hey,
technically the story flips and she ends up switching places.
It's
with Cinderella.
So ridiculous that but there's Anastasia a Cinderella time it. Travel story.
There
yeah.
is.
Yeah, I like just saw the cover. I was like, I'm done with this.
I mean, we've seen The Jungle Book be turned into a live action movie from both the House of Mouse and other, you know, studios. You know, we've had the Beauty and the Beast one turned into a live action. Lion King.
Aladdin.
Pete's Dragon. Alice in Wonderland. I mean, there's been so many that...
Little Mermaid's coming out soon.
I'm pretty sure they're going to come out with one of those too as well.
We're getting another Haunted Mansion. So if you have an attraction...
There's another one?
Yep. If you have an attraction to attractions, they got you.
It's like, and then even then, there is, so for a franchise that's geared around killing, they're actually creating another Saw movie, Saw what? 10. It's called Saw I'm 10. Surprised. And it's like, you need to stop while you're ahead. You were able to put Chris Rock in the last one. What more do you need? I mean, Gabriel Iglesias probably isn't on the docket to do it. So, you know, it's getting crazy to where original movies are so few and far between that movies that are not franchises or remakes are considered the go-to films nowadays. I mean, you look at this one movie that's coming out, Beast. I will be the first one to tell you I'm a huge fan of Idris Elba.
I just didn't want to see him like this.
This what?
I don't know. Like, this is...
I don't know either, which is why I'm trying to figure out what you're talking about.
Sorry. So, much like you, I love Idris Elba. I'm like, I want to go see what he's in. He was great in Sonic 2, which I was like super balking at. And Spencer and Eddie can attest to that. There's also an entire episode on it. Anyway, with Beast, I was like, what? Why is it Cujo with a lion?
Cujo with a lion.
I don't know.
Is that what you just said?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Am I going number to one sit under
on
the table?
On the number one on the Family Feud board for if you are unaware of Stephen King movies, this is something you would most likely say.
Yep.
Because this movie is more akin kind of to The Ghost in the Darkness with Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas, but it's one of those movies, even so, that is so much, there's enough differentiation between the two that it makes it look unique enough. But still, it is literally just a man and his family trying to hide from a killer lion. And if you give somebody that that like synopsis and like, hey, you want to go see a movie about a man and his kids running away from a killer lion, that's not really enough to draw people in.
Yeah.
So it's one of those movies that people are talking about as like, hey, you should go see this movie. It's actually interesting. It's whatever. It's because it doesn't have a superpower involved, or it's not a part of the House of Mouse and doesn't have, you know, purple, white, and green, you know, exosuits, and they fly with Emperor Zurg or whatever. Like, there's a differentiation enough between mainstream franchise remakes, you know, the Marvel powerhouse in itself, and movies that are just different.
Well, I think we can also, like, circling back over to Paramount, when Lost City came out, my first question to you, because I think, didn't you have...
I had to go see it.
Yeah, for a premiere or a press...
For a press screening.
And I literally, because I'd seen everything for it, and I was like, I love rom-coms, but I literally saw the first trailer, and I looked at you, and I was like, if this is anything like Romancing the Stone... Let me know, because I loved Romancing the Stone when I was a kid. And I was like, please don't be that. And when you came back and you're like, it's not really that. But I was like, but you're going to take elements of it, aren't you?
Mm. It was different enough that actually had my interest of it being something unique. Now, was it good? That's a horse of a different color, because you'll have to check out the episode on that one. But in terms of its watchability, it was definitely something that I could honestly say I haven't seen in the last couple of decades done on the big screen, which was just kind of a unique. You have an author who blah, blah, blah. I mean, you have to see it. What? Why are you holding up the hand?
Spencer, did you see The Lost City? I don't think we did an episode on it.
We didn't do an episode on it.
Correct.
Oh, I just did a write-up on it. My bad. It was good.
He's too cool. I was like, hold up, Spencer. It was actually okay.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. You know, Daniel Radcliffe does a really good job as a psychotic bad guy. Channing Tatum is palatable in this one. Sandra Bullock is always funny. And Brad Pitt has a really fun role in it as well. But all in all, it was something that I wasn't used to seeing in theaters as of late. And that's the thing, is that, like, between the lack of new movies and, I don't know, just the idea of news just not being worth reporting on, I guess, or whatever, for many people, I don't know if we're going to be trying to pull as many headlines as we can when it comes to information like this. I don't know. But, like, Spencer, what do you think?
Oh, I pulled up a list of, like, the things that are coming out next year, because, like, you know, this year's pretty much over. And
thanks.
Yeah, most of the big ones are just sequels to things that are already, you know, out.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got Indiana Jones 5, which is slated for next year.
Oh, give me the garlic. I got to ward the house. Let's know.
Barbie's a new one. So you got that and that madness.
It's a live action and not the animated Barbie series.
Like, when you're looking at Barbie and being like, well, that's new. Like,
yeah, I mean,
not in a great place.
Yeah, no, that's a great point to make. Because if you're like, oh my God, they're finally doing the Lincoln Log movie. Oh my God, about dang time. Like, then you start kind of questioning, like, what is the expectations of the world around us today?
Poor. Poor.
I mean,
how many Cars and Cars Variations movies were there? There's planes and trucks. There's not even the bootlegs.
Well, like, there's three movies.
Cars, official movies.
And then there's the little series that they're doing.
But there's like
the Mater movies. Planes, and then there's trains. No, planes. Not
planes, but there's one that's like the Rescue Whatever Squad, too. There's like a... There's some other ones.
At one point in time, I felt like they were trying to create their own little cinematic universe for the Cars structure. It's weird.
I stole structure? That idea from like Chevron commercials in the 90s, such 80s.
I mean, we're not going to say they bit off of that, but we're saying they bit off of that. I mean Chevron should technically go to court for this. but you know what? It's one of those elements about movies where I try to push as much as I can to really find some of the more nuanced movies, something that doesn't always hit the mainstream, which is exactly, Spencer actually was the one who did this.
Good job, Spencer.
Which is exactly how we stumbled upon, and by we I mean me and Chad at the time, on Blindspotting. Like, we literally stumbled upon that because you had mentioned it was in theaters, you wanted to see it. It didn't get any kind of press anywhere. I was like, sure, I mean, I guess we can go see it. And we went to go see it at a late night showing, because the only showings that we're having were the ones at like towards the tail end of the night. I think we went at like at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
It was a late showing. And we literally walked out of the theater and were standing right outside the theater in contemplation of what we had just seen, because it was just that thought provoking. And it's weird. I don't know if it's sad to say, I haven't been that excited to come on to the show to talk about a movie as much as I had that night for Blindspotting, because I was literally, well, okay, Everything Everywhere All at Once, actually, great point.
I feel like that's still even in its own category, mm-hmm. because like that one had more like hype around it.
It did.
Blindspotting.
Yeah, because Blindspotting is like, there's nothing.
like, because even in the elements of, like, when we went to go see the Mr. Rogers documentary, that was cool, and we sat around and we talked about it afterwards at the nearby cafe. But it just, Blindspotting was one of those movies that I think has the largest gap from expectation to first impression that I've ever had in a movie. Coming in fresh, I'm going to be completely honest, in the mindset of, this is probably just like another, you know, some type of, you know, movie that just exploits the things that happened in Oakland or something. You know, it's probably going to have gangsters, or it's probably going to have this or whatever. And mind you, Fruitvale Station, I had seen that years prior, but I didn't match the two, seeing as they were both take place in Oakland. And then coming out of it, like, being just completely blown away, 100%, 120,000%. Like, this movie, I don't think I've ever been that changed by a movie since that point. Mm. And with Everything Everywhere, we saw the trailers, we were excited, we were like, okay, this looks cool. We went in, it met the expectations, and then some.
You were not excited about that movie. Spencer and I were excited about that movie, and you went, because you went, I don't know.
I wasn't sure, but yeah. I kind of had an idea of what I was getting into. Mm-hmm. This movie, I had no idea what I was getting into.
True.
I mean, there weren't even that many trailers for it out, you know.
Well, the poster doesn't really tell you anything either, because I remember it being recommended by both of you, and I like looked at the cover on Vudu, and I was like, oh, this is whatever, and turned on, I was like, oh, crap, this is it is the do not judge a book by its cover, like, to the fullest extent, like, in the best way.
Yeah, and even the trailer, from what I remember, like, it didn't give that much away,
which it didn't.
Is how you should do it. But, like, no, like, I remember, like, the only reason I saw that movie was back because of the good old service of MoviePass. That made no sense, yeah. But it got me to see a lot of movies.
What was it, $9.99?
Yeah, for as many movies.
For as many movies as you wanted to go see. Hey.
And you'd pay, like, the $2 extra if it was, like a blockbuster or something like that. Oh, it was brilliant.
But, yeah, I mean, it's just, we're getting to that time where, I hate to say it, but we might be reaching, you know, superhero fatigue, and even like large film franchise fatigue, because even people are getting it with Star Wars, and now that the Star Wars franchise is over, so to speak, the main one,
the Skywalker franchise is over
for right now. I mean, we're getting more into a lot of other elements that are like, okay, because even then, even some of the smaller shows, it's still about a Skywalker. You know, I think we might be hitting that point. I've had this conversation with other people, and it tends to go either way in terms of whether or not it's true. But all in all, I do think that it is a real thing. I don't know if it's here yet, but I do feel like the more and more we keep pushing a lot of these movies, the faster and faster we're getting to that point.
So, well, yeah. Like Marvel specifically, they have a problem of like pumping out so many movies now versus when they first were going. Like, because before it was like either 1 to 2 per year, and now we're up to 4. With 1 year that's coming up, it's gonna have 5.
Or and, less, right?
Well,
in between?
And like, it's a lot. It's too much.
And I know we're going long on this, but it's a really interesting conversation, because if you look at in the past years when there were franchise films that were being created, you had to wait years, multiple years before the next one would come up. Star Wars was like every 3 years, 3-4 years. And Back to the Future was like every 2 years.
Please do not reboot that or remake it. Just leave it alone. Leave it alone.
They're eyeing it. I know they are.
You feel it too? Yeah. Because
Lord of the Rings was another one that was like every 2 years, I want to say, or every...
But they had filmed it all together at once and were editing through
it. Yeah,
so
I gave that piece of knowledge last time. No, true. They used the money they made off of the first one to go back and do reshoots. But it seems like the more and more we're getting closer to, you know, the future, if you will, which just, let's define it as tomorrow. Like, every time we get closer and closer, it seems like the money machines, if you will, just are like, you know what? I bet we would make more money if we pushed our actors and everybody and made 5 films in 1 year. And it's like, I don't know.
I mean, it's coupled, and I have always, and the more that I've gotten into being not a critical watcher, but watching not only for enjoyment, but perspective.
An observational watcher.
Thank you. I've noticed that it's not just the push for the money machine, but it's the push for the nostalgia machine. And there are a lot of franchises which are going back and examining premises, going mm-hmm. back to the originals, doing prequels, going whichever which way they are.
Yeah.
And some of them hit the mark and some of them don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's to hoping that with as many franchise and continuation of the remakes that are being done, we get more pushes for independent films and unique films. A lot that are coming out, like
Emergency?
Emergency, and what's that one with John Boyega that's coming out?
The Woman King?
No. Oh, that one looks good, too.
Yeah, that's Regina King.
So, here's to hoping, but, you know, it is what it is, and we'll be standing by to hopefully talk about some more of it. But that brings us to, honestly, the conversation for tonight, and that is the Predator prequel, Prey. As we mentioned literally a few seconds ago, the world has been inundated with remakes, prequels, and sequels. Well, we are adding to that machine as we talk about this prequel that was announced not too long ago, and then unbeknownst to everyone else, this movie becoming an actually interesting and thought or a conversation starting movie. So we decided we were going to jump on that train like everybody else and be a good old boy and girl and go ahead and talk about this movie. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us them opening or that official synopsis goodness?
Set in the Comanche Nation 300 years ago, Prey is the story of a young woman, Naru, a fierce and highly skilled warrior. She has been raised in the shadow of some of the most legendary hunters who roam the Great Plains. So when danger threatens her camp, she sets out to protect her people. The prey she stalks and ultimately confronts turns out to be a highly evolved alien predator. With a technologically advanced arsenal, resulting in a vicious and terrifying showdown between the two adversaries.
That's right. When you said she has been raised, I honestly thought you were going to say she was raised by the streets, so she's got to be down with
them. Whoa.
Oh, thank you, Coolio, for that lovely nostalgia. Directed by Dan Trachtenberg, the film stars Amber Midthunder, Dakota Beavers, Michelle Thrush, Stormy Kipp, Julian Black Antelope, Bennett Taylor, and Dane DeLiegro. A couple of tidbits about the movie. Co-producer John Davis said that he feels the original 1987 Predator was, quote, a wonderful, interesting movie, and I know what worked about it, he added. I feel like we kind of never got back there again. We ended in different places. I think this is a worthy compliment to the first one. It's going to be as good. And taken from our conversations off air, talking about the different areas that the franchise itself goes to, it's really interesting to kind of see how the Predator has evolved or devolved in certain cases, giving us different opportunities to see him in different situations. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. Another tidbit, this movie actually was released with dialogue that was dubbed in the Comanche language. There's also obviously an English language version, but there's also a Comanche version with... there's an English language version with Comanche subtitles, as well as the Comanche subtitled one with English subtitles.
Yeah, the Comanche dubbed version with English subtitles.
What she said.
Yep.
as of August 9th, too, as well, August 9th of this year, this movie is now the highest rated Predator movie in the entire franchise, according to Rotten Tomatoes, and the all-time highest viewed premiere of any TV show or movie on Hulu ever. So,
in other words, they done messed up, son, on that release. Haha, money machine, you messed up.
What do you mean?
Well, here's another, I'm going to try not to rabbit hole. It should have had a theatrical release. And if this keeps going with it, it's going, they're going to be like, hey, would you like to see Prey in theaters? People be like, why would I do that? I pay to see it at home on my couch.
Yes and no. I agree with that in part. Yes, they should have started it as a cinema theatrical release. But I do believe if it did make the transition into theaters after the fact, I think people would pay to a certain extent.
Spencer got that face.
I feel like some people, like we are the type of people who would pay. But like, I feel like a majority of people would be like, I can just watch it at home. Mm-hmm.
True. The thing is that it's getting a lot of notoriety right now. Mm-hmm. It's getting a lot of press, and a lot of people are saying the exact same thing, that it's a refreshing return to form for the franchise, not so much the director, and brings back that nostalgia vibe from the very first Predator movie. And I feel like if enough people catch wind of that and they see it and they're like, oh my gosh, this is great, I'd love to see it, you know, on a bigger screen or with surround sound or even in like a D-box kind of 4D situation. Imagine seeing that movie in like when all the things are happening all around you. Those couple of scenes where like the darts are like going across by their ear and you just hear right by your ear.
Oh no. Can't handle that.
Yeah, okay. The only thing I'll point out is that remember that time that Morbius came in?
Oh my god. Did it go to D-Box?
Oh no, I don't think it went
back to theaters.
Yeah, I just know it left and then it came back. Because they couldn't understand memes.
They just...
Somebody didn't get it and said, you know what? It's a great idea. We should totally do
people
it.
We're talking about this movie.
Like, it's all over.
Get it's back in there.
Trending on Twitter. Like, I don't know.
The kids love Morbius. It's Morbin time.
It's no. That ridiculous video with... What's his name? What is his name? Jared Leto. Didn't he do that video where he had the actual script and it said it's Morbin time?
Mm-hmm. Morbius 2, it's Morbin time.
Yep. He was having fun. He knew it was
a joke. He didn't have much of a choice.
He knew it was a joke, but come on.
It's his only option at that right? point. He's like, get mad.
Like every time he does that, he's like crying right after they stop him. Oh my god, my life is a joke.
I'm a serious actor, you guys.
Really? And then we saw Joker. we saw him as Joker.
I was going to say, he wasn't in Joker, but...
Sorry.
Normally.
hey, we have one of him doing it now, too.
True. But still, this is a movie. Obviously, as we've mentioned, this is pitted as the prequel to the 1987 classic. This particular movie... was kind of spurned out of the idea when you get the original Predator. One of the individuals is stereotypically a Native American tracker for the elite squad named Billy. Go figure. And Billy is he's essentially killed off in the original film.
Not first.
No, he's not the first that dies. He's smarter than that. But he does end up, you know, biting the bullet. And the biggest question had always been, there had been some questions. I know I myself had asked, like, what if there was movies that pertain to the Predator that preceded this? I mean, we've had so many different iterations of Predator, from the 1987 original, the sequel that takes place in L.A. We had the Alien versus Predator, the first one and the second one, Requiem. We had Predators with Adrian Brody, Danny Trejo, Topher Grace, Lawrence Fishburne. And then we had The Predator back in 2018, which was god-awful. And the thing is, I never remember the main guy's name, but he's the one who plays the Corinthian in the new Sandman series on Netflix.
I like him,
something
though.
Boyd or...
Yeah, he's something Boyd. He's good as the Corinthian.
sorry. And then we have this film. Now, every single iteration, and mind you, that's just mainstream cinema releases. You also have in the interim therein the comic books. You have the crossovers with Batman versus Predator, which is a 4-part series or a 4-part storyline, because it's not immediately one after another, but they do space it out. It's, I think, at least a year or so in between each one. And then you get the crossover with Alien versus Predator, which a lot of people aren't too sure as to like which basis in truth each one like holds in terms of, is this part of Alien canon or is this part of Predator canon? Which then we do get a follow-up to in The Predator, where it makes the first Alien versus Predator movie canon because of the staff that the
Predator
chief Predator or whatever
the
gives
guy
to
who
the
survives.
No, it's not the guy who survives.
Well, the one that goes
have
after
you seen the movie?
The weird taily, the xenomorph tail thing. I was in Seattle at a con in a bar.
So she wasn't seeing it. Okay.
Oh, no, I was watching it because I had pie and I was not drinking it.
I was going to say, was that his name?
It was coconut. No, it was coconut cream pie. And literally, it was playing behind the bar. I was
whatever
watching.
Games you were playing with guys in. That's neither here nor there. No, the movie
Jeremy
ends.
City Comic-Con.
The movie ends with the main Predator dying. And she's the one who kills the queen.
Because she's got
and
the stabby
then
stack.
And then, no, it's not because she has a stabby stab. She connects the chains that are still attached to the queen xenomorph to a large cistern and pushes it off the cliff, and it pulls the queen xenomorph into the icy depths of the water.
She's also a really ugly queen. I'm sorry, girl. The xenomorph, the queen xenomorph.
It's like, what?
It just.
Anyways, Lord above.
You did that.
And so the actual, like, observers of this ritual, which it looks like he's some type of warrior chief, gives her not only the staff that she was using, but also gives her the spear weapon that belonged to the fallen warrior. So she's got both. No, actually, I think she loses that staff, which is why they're able to find it. She loses the what you call stabby stab. She loses that spear with the xenomorph tail attached to it, and she's given that one as a gift for killing the xenomorph. So needless to say, I think the biggest issue with all of those is the last one, because the whole storyline as to how, like, the main guy, which did we ever find his name?
The
main guy, the one from the one
2018 protagonist for The Predator. I have to ask you this question, Eddie.
Boyd Holbrook. Sorry.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh, he is a Boyd. There
yeah.
You go. How is that the worst one compared to Predator 2 taking it to the streets? Like,
because you have Danny Glover. Danny
okay.
freaking Glover.
If that's the
you
only
have
saving...
Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton, the man who has transpired from the second Alien movie into the second Predator movie. How can you go wrong with that?
Because he's in seconds and not first?
The only thing that's disproven is that he is wonderfully awesome at getting killed at by a Predator. By an alien. He's great at being murdered.
Murder most foul.
Sadly, he's not here with us anymore. So I just made myself sad. But the 2018 one was just so ridiculous. It incorporated predator dogs, if that makes any sense, which
like
it doesn't.
Like Demi Gordon dog? I said Gordon dogs. Sorry. Gordon Ramsay dogs.
Do you mean Demi Moore dogs? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Demi Moore dogs?
No, I can't unsee that in my head.
Yep.
Oh, no.
These dogs walking down runways and doing striptease movies.
Striptease.
And then they do like that whole half bowl cut and go visit their dead husbands.
Then they shave off all their hair.
True. To become warriors for their state.
Exactly.
For their nation. Which it's an awkward movie. The 2018 one is so awkward. You have Thomas Jane, Keegan-Michael Key. You got Trevante Rhodes, who's actually not bad in it. Excuse me. You got Jake Busey. You got there's a number of people in this movie that really make you question how they pitched their characters were going to be in that movie. Because Thomas Jane and Keegan-Michael Key are like old-time war buddies who ultimately the film not ends, but their story ends by doing like a suicide pact. They're like, oh, you know, if you're going to die, I'll die with you kind of thing, blah, blah, blah. And then the whole purpose of the movie is the Predator is trying to steal the child. because the child has this technology.
I've seen this movie, and
you don't remember any of that.
No,
do you? Yeah.
Like excellent. I remember Keegan Michael Key. I remember the very end of the movie where the guy got a predator suit or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
It looked terrible. I saw a. So I was at Comic-Con 2018.
I was just gonna. She was probably at a convention.
Well, I was at Comic-Con 2018, and I got tickets to Conan. And the night that I got tickets to Conan, it was where they were interviewing the cast for the new Predator movie. I'd never seen it, and I got the Conan Predator, which looks really cool. I must admit, the pop. But I was like, "What is this?" And then I ended up in preparation for this.
Wait. Was that you said 2017?
2018.
20. Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. But the pop is really cool. Anyway, I was in preparation for today. I was like, man, I never saw that movie. I didn't really care to. But I had been watching something on YouTube and they showed the suit at the end. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this suit looks terrible. Who put on cardboard and plexi? Like, what's going on? But yeah. I think I'm the purist coming into this conversation.
Well, and you got Shane Black was the one who directed that one. Shane Black, if you don't remember him, he's the soldier in the first movie who says all the raunchy jokes nobody really gets. That's Shane Black. I actually got to hang out with him for a little bit because they wouldn't let us into Comic-Con at the time, even though we were press. And he was hilarious because his manager's like, Shane, no, Shane, don't go outside. Don't do it, Shane. And we're like, come on, come back. Because there was like crowds of thousands of people outside the doors. And we were literally right inside. It was myself, fellow colleague and friend of the show, Laura Sirico.
Hey, I love Laura.
Me and Laura were inside trying to get to the exhibition part so that we could start on the preview night. And Shane was trying to get in to go to the booth, and the security had no idea who he was. And it was me, him, Laura, and his manager. And Shane's like, F it! I don't care! I gotta get out of here! And he's like walking to the door, and there's literally a crowd of thousands of people, and his manager's yelling at him, and he's yelling at security, and we're yelling at security. We're like, do you know who the heck this guy is? You're about to make him go outside! Oh my god! It was chaos. Chaos ensued, but he's a funny guy. But we're not talking about that one.
we're vaguely talking about that one, but not
transition from 2018's movie to this year's movie, we have such a difference not only in time period and people, but we also have a difference in almost in about the caliber of the movie itself. In terms of first impression, or not first impressions, but expectations, what were you guys expecting to go into when it came with this movie? Spencer?
Honestly,
deep breath. Oh my god,
I wasn't sure. Like, the trailer looked good, but then like I vaguely remember that last movie we saw.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know.
It's the Ghostbusters effect. I know. Because yeah, we had that first, that god awful one in 2016, the one that, to be quite frank, before she started on this show, Miss Stenographer over here defended it to some extent, which was really odd because it was not...
I defended one particular performance in there because I personally like that person.
Yeah, that's it. When Voodoo is like, here, have this movie, like to like everyone
in the nation...
Like, that's not a good sign.
I want to put a poll out there one of these days. If we ever get massive and we have enough pull, I want to know how many people were unaware that this was put into their Voodoo playlist. Like, I just need to know, because it's like, you know.
It's the U2 phenomenon for that album.
Yeah. People got mad about that album.
I remember so many outlets being like, did you get U2 in your iTunes, like, in your iTunes library unexpectedly? No, you can't return it. Everyone's like, what the heck is this?
Yeah. It's like trauma. It's like when you find out everyone else has gone through it, you don't feel so alone. This is like one of those things where, like, oh my god, it happened to you too? But because nobody was going to say anything at the time, because, you know, with the Me Too movement and everything else going on, it was just...
People still said stuff.
Well, not as much. Yeah. Like, in terms of it being put into their Voodoo playlist.
Yeah.
You know, no one's going to be like, oh, I don't want this crap. Oh, you don't support women? Is that what you're saying? What are you saying? Women can't do as well. Like, you don't want to have those conversations because you don't want to put in that light. Like, of course, I support, you know, female empowerment. This was just a really bad movie, you know, plain and simple. So I want to figure out. Either way, Ghostbusters effect. Continue.
Yeah. So
sorry.
Yeah. Just like. So yeah, I had all those feelings coming into this, so I was kind of just open to like being proved wrong because like I don't know, that trailer like had an inkling that like there was something more here. Mostly because I was like, how is this not like an instant bloodbath? Like,
true.
It's like 1700s. Like, what are these people gonna do? Like, that was the thing. I was like, what are these people gonna do against like this thing that came here in the spaceship? Like, it seems like it should be over and done. So I'm interested in seeing how they are surviving.
Very true. Ames.
So like I stated, I think I'm the freshest coming to this table because much like everything, I didn't see Predator until
last year.
Yeah. Maybe last year. Might have been
Might have been this year.
It was this year. It was early this year.
Oh wow.
And again, I had avoided it. Simply because I'm working my seven steps.
what is this, an AA meeting?
It is, because I do not always agree with 80s action movies. So I'm making efforts and inroads. And I watched this and I was like...
Thankfully, she saw this, she mentioned before she saw Bloodsport.
Yep.
So it the viewing of Predator wasn't tainted by her viewing of Bloodsport.
Okay, I have a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. What do you mean that you don't always agree with 80s movies? What does that mean?
No, 80s action movies.
Okay.
So my thing is, like, I never found the appeal or the draw of it. Okay. But it also might have been the household I've grown up in.
Also, she hasn't seen enough of them, so she doesn't understand the full pool of it.
No.
It's like a hot tub. You're like, if I wanted a bath, I would just stay inside and take a bath. But then if you really think about it and you see enough people experience it and then you experience it more and more, then it's like, okay, I like hot tubs.
Oh, okay.
I have so many things about that hot tub analogy, but we're right here.
Okay, well, I also want to know, like, do you think maybe, like, it was a case of, like, you had the misfortune of seeing, like, the bad ones?
I don't know. So I remember watching Last Action Hero when I was a kid.
That was 90s.
Oh, see? Well, and then other than that, I don't... The house that I lived in was very, and I can say this, very sterile. So it was either before the 70s, so we're like looking 50s, some 60s and 70s.
Hold on.
Like movies?
Did you say very sterile?
In relation to action movies or movies in general.
Just that statement alone, just... Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. But so I didn't have a lot of exposure in me, so there was a lot of other people that are like, yeah, this movie, and I was like, I don't understand, and so I'm okay not to understand. And now being around such a broad swath of nerddom where these are keystones to not only like franchises, fandoms, but it is like ingrained in people's personalities and lives, I'm like,
It is okay. 80s. So what you're missing in the grand scheme of it is 80s action movies are the memes and the languages of our today generation for us. A lot of people will look at a bunch of people hanging out, and then if someone says kumite, yeah, then it's like everybody understands what that means. Like,
my
oh my god,
on the podcast would do that, and I'm sitting there going, I don't know what this means, but I'm like smiling and nodding, and I'm like, they know I'm a fake,
or like if you're walking out of, or if you're about to leave someone and you want them to stay there and be like, hey, stick around, like they're like, oh yeah, this is, like you get those references, and it's like it is part of our language of our generation. Why are we called millennials? I'm sorry.
I love that I got in trouble for not bringing coffee today, and he's rabbit holing even more than I am.
Yeah. It has been a long day, but I'm just,
might not have been the greatest.
But I was okay. It's essentially the language of this generation in terms of how we speak to each other, and how, because it's not so much the idea of being completely knowledgeable of every single film, but it's knowing enough to get those references in how we talk to each other.
Well, it's not even, so if we're saying it's knowing enough, I could have read the synopsis of these movies and never experienced it and be like, oh yeah, I know.
But then that would be cheating.
But and exactly.
And you'd be a fake millennial. And be like, it's like,
my
it's
birth,
like,
therefore,
or a millennial.
There you go. Because it's like,
oh,
it's like
I'm
you
getting
going
a shirt and a hat.
It's like you going to Mexico and saying, yo, caro, uno, watero, por favor. Like,
watero. Yo, caro, uno, watero, por favor.
Well, I mean, dang, when'd you come from Texas? But, you know, it's like those people who, like, go to other countries and try to speak their language and they have no idea what they're saying. It's kind of in that effort. It's like, okay, if you're going to go over there and speak the language, you might as well know what you're trying to say.
Or at least stumble along enough that and you keep trying until you get it right. I'm in that section of my life right now, gentlemen.
But you are walking into other countries and speaking English, hoping that other people will get you, or listening to other people's conversation, smiling and nodding in the way like if somebody's trying to cover passing gas.
Oh, God. People do that? Oy. No, so I am in that mode that I am learning. So do not take this from me, sir. I am actively learning.
Yo no Nintendo, senora.
Oh my lord. That is so bad. it's just so coming into this, I had seen the original 87 Predator early this year. I also finally understood where when the Capeless Crusaders were streaming, it was, you son of a... Well, I can't say it because I don't need an E rating on the podcast here. But the handshake, the super masculine, like,
yeah,
guns a-throbbing handshake.
Well, and also goes to the memes that have, exactly, you know, those memes that have them with their hands and whatnot and like, oh, and this and this.
And we used to use it for the Capeless Crusaders, and my podcast mates will literally meet each other and do that handshake. And I was just like, it's something with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I know that much. I don't know anything else. Okay. And watching the first one, I actually got an appreciation for it. I also got mad at certain people, but for me, the story was original enough that I was like, oh, this is actually kind of fun. This is okay. I'm here for this. So my expectations going into this movie was, I like, much to, I think, Eddie's chagrin, I like period pieces.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, oh, this looks good. And again, there wasn't much in the trailer, but I had the same like apprehension. I'm like, what is going on that people are still alive?
We should be specific. You like English period movies.
No.
Because like period what movies. Other period movies are you aware of that aren't English?
What's the one with...
You can't even remember the name?
Well, all I remember is that it was about the Great English. Land Rush and...
The Great Land Rush?
Yeah.
I'm asking because is that what it's called? I don't know.
No, it's... It was like the Oklahoma Land Rush where they ran out and they're like, you have your flags, go find your land. And it was Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman after.
Where he plays the Irish person.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you're talking about.
And I don't know if Gangs of New York counts, but I looked up it. So basically, I like that he's rubbing his eyes and I'm made him angry.
No, I'm listening.
So the thing is, I don't always like set right now pieces. Or movies that are, let's have a slice of life from today. I like things that can be, and it sounds really dumb if I say old timey, but I do. So they would define themselves as period pieces.
Mm-hmm. You know what else there are period piece movies? 80s movies. In terms of expectations for me, because I'm probably the only person at this table who has seen all, if not read, most of everything pertaining to the Predator films. And honestly, in similar fashion like Spencer, my expectations were, please, oh God, please do not let this be anything remotely like the 2018 movie. Sterling K. Brown has a role in that movie. It's the only movie that I've seen thus far anything in with him in it that I did not like. Jake Busey, funny enough, comes back to play the son of the role his father played in the second Predator movie.
In Predators 2, Taking It to the Streets. I'm just going to keep calling it that. I don't care.
Okay.
I can't call it Electric Boogaloo.
I mean, you could.
I know, but it would work. It's not cohesive. It's like Beatrice with the nails.
Predator 2, Alien Boogaloo, something. I've seen mostly... So honestly, my biggest thing was just that I didn't want this to stink. Like, first off, you're incorporating a native nation that you have to get right, number one, any kind of insult to that will essentially wash the whole movie away.
Yep.
Plain and simple. You know, if you have any kind of distasteful representation of their treatment during that time, immediately wash of this film. So they were going on two different levels. They were going on it being a Predator prequel, as well as a movie that is going to highlight the Comanche Nation. And that really is a tightrope performance, because any imbalance in that, and you're going to lose one side or the other. If it focused too much on the Comanche Nation and there was so much focus that it forgets that it's a Predator movie, you're going to lose Predator fans. If it's so much on the Predator side, which it just seems like every Predator movie is just full of insensitive and like really malicious jokes, not malicious, but chauvinistic jokes
and insensitive.
You don't want that to happen in this movie. So, to be honest, I was worried it just wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. Now, after actually seeing the film, I have to admit that did change drastically. And I want to hear from Amy first in terms of your first impressions.
Yes, this is awesome. I had so much fun. Oh my gosh. I love this dog. I love
the dog in the movie.
Yes. And also the way that they kind of put in an end credit, not end credit sequel, a credits scene. I liked that. Yeah.
Which we'll get to that.
And hence why I'm cutting myself off so I don't go more, yes, it was awesome. Yes, Spencer.
So after seeing this movie, like, okay, so I, like, hopping on what you said about, like, you know, getting the balance right.
Yeah.
I kind of just assumed they weren't going to.
They weren't going to keep the balance.
Like, I assumed, like it was going to be, like, low-key offensive to, like, the Comanche tribe.
Right?
Because I assumed that, like, they're going to, like, pull a Last Airbender on them.
Oh.
And just be played by a whole... So, like, when, like, I started seeing, like, hey, these I was
they're,
like, oh,
they're actual Native Americans.
Yeah, like I stopped the movie and like looked at it. I was like, oh, this is already great.
It's like War Chief played by Billy Crystal. Like as it would have been, toss the movie out right away. No, I totally get you. Go ahead.
Yeah. So like even just like 10 minutes in, I was like, oh, this has like some like, you know, real hope here.
Yeah.
So like go to the end of the movie, I'm like, this movie is pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
I really liked it. Like, it was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I was, like we said, worried to the point to where I'm like, I don't know if I should watch it or wait for people to watch it and then tell me it's okay to watch. Because the last thing we need is another level of insensitivity to the Native American nation. And to be quite frank, if a movie's going to be banking off of that to make money, like just at the expense of a group of people, like no,
yeah,
we don't need that. I don't need that.
Nobody needs that.
But then after watching it, I'm like, this was actually good. This was actually decent. And it makes a lot of sense too, in terms of how the movie worked really hard to make sure that the people that they're portraying in the film, there's an actual language, there's an actual like subtitle or dubbed version for those people as well. I mean, how great is it that there is a literal dubbed version for the Comanche people who want to see it on their streaming platforms?
To be very honest, I actually wanted to watch that one first, because much like Japanese, when we get something in another language, I'm like, experience it the way it was supposed to be. And then I realized that it was dubbed and it had started slowly driving me nuts, even though it sounded beautiful. And so I switched over to the English version. Well, the English and Comanche and French, like the one that they had released. And I'm like, okay, this is still okay. Like, this is really cool.
Yeah. I really appreciated the movie, and I really appreciated their willingness to go 100% on both sides of that balance to make it work so well. It gave enough to appreciate the Comanche Nation in the film to where it didn't belittle them. It didn't make them like, oh, they're inferior. Here comes the white man who's got all this technology. And then here, you know, and here comes this this predator that's going to, like you were mentioning earlier, that's going to make them make a bloodbath out of them or whatever. I'm glad it didn't. I'm glad there was a lot of recognition of the skill and the like killer ability for some of these warriors of these nations, and recognizing some of the honest brutalities, like with the French that came through as well, and recognizing there was still another predator out there outside of the main predator who didn't see the Native Americans as actual people. You know, they saw them as part of trade and stuff like that. So I really appreciated the movie for what it did there. And honestly, I appreciated the story overall. And mind you, we will be covering spoilers in this movie. It is on Hulu. If you haven't had a chance to see it, you should probably see it. But this is your warning. We are going to talk about spoilers. And one of the things I did want to talk about in the movie was the first off recognition, and it's not a sexist thing. It's kind of the dynamic of the Comanche people in terms of the women gathered herbs and gathered, you know, food and forage while the men went to go hunt. And you have this great performance of the lead character, Naru, in the film, played by Amber Mid-Thunder, who is just somebody who wants to prove herself that she can hunt. She's not asking to be a warrior. She's asking to be given the ability to go hunt like the boys do, you know? And it was a really great opportunity in terms of empowerment and so forth, because even when we get to the end of the movie and we see that recognition of empowerment on that little girl's face who's looking up at her in that scene, and you're like, yes, she is making this. This movie was chock full of great symbolism for that, because even today we are still living in an age where some men have this kind of chauvinistic mindset that, you know, women are meant to stay home and make the babies and dinner at the same time kind of thing. Like, that's the whole mindset, and it's a very antiquated mindset, but still, nevertheless, it's around even today. And giving a movie the opportunity to say, even in this type of environment, women can still be awesome, mm-hmm. you know? And mind you, no, it doesn't take an alien to come to Earth and women have to go and kill it to prove that. But the fact remains is that the way they went about doing it was cool in this movie. And the setup for everything was so unique. I loved, if we're just talking about like in terms of the predator itself, I love the predator design of this movie. Mm. I love the way this movie portrayed them as almost like a de-evolved variation of the ones we see later on. Because there's plenty of things in terms of his arsenal that are not customary for some of the predators we've seen in the more recent ones. And I have to appreciate that. I don't know. Do you guys recall the first predator and how he looked in comparison to this predator? I don't mean the one that they scrapped.
I'm sorry. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
A walking pink shrimp.
The pink shrimp in the woods. It's the Splits pink shrimp in the woods outfit. Like, you ruined it.
You're welcome. I'm glad I could show that to you guys.
So I think when we're talking about the design of the predators, in Prey being the primal predator, and I know there's an entire lore about the predators. I believe you have more information on that than I do. Yeah. Seeing from first to most recent iteration, and the release of all the behind the scenes footage,
yeah,
for the practical work that they did on this predator for the Prey movie.
Well, the practical work that they covered with CG.
Yeah. I mean, well, the practical work itself is night and day in comparison to the original, in some of the best ways. Like, the reveal for the original, it's not bad, but it feels, how do I say this nicely? It feels extra juicy, and they were working on creating something entirely original, which meant that they didn't really follow rules.
Which, technically it was completely original. I mean, nobody had seen what the Predator fully looked like in the trailers and whatnot. And when you went to the movies and you saw this thing, I mean, you just saw the helmet for the most part, and then you see the actual Predator face when he drops his helmet in front of, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that's where he gets that, you know, "You're one ugly mother," you know, that whole scene. And it it surprised fans. And in this particular situation, we do get, like I said, a more, like you said, a primal variation of the Predator. But it's interesting that they go that route. I don't know if it was 100% necessary to de-evolve them.
I mean, because otherwise you're saying in 300 years, nothing has changed.
They're aliens. I mean, why would they need to? They're already an advanced race. They have created cloaking devices. Why would they need like bolts on a gun to shoot when they have cloaking devices?
I mean, you know, they just make things better. Like, things get better over time.
I'm not saying that the idea was bad. Yeah. That's not what I'm saying at all in terms of this. So don't get me wrong on that. I am saying, though, that there are... I don't know if the need to state that there is an evolutionary process to this alien species. Like, we needed to see a de-evolved variation so that it matches, to a certain extent, the weaponry and status of Earth itself and its warriors. I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Well, like, I think it makes more sense for them because it lets you see that they are not stagnant. Like, they also use like their brains to like improve themselves to become better hunters over time.
Yeah, I think it wasn't the question of making them, de-evolving them. You could also take it in the same way that Naru's, like, her arc or what she wants to do is she has to pass her great hunt. And if we have somebody who's scouting a planet who might be in the kind of the same boat as her, where it's, we're scouting and I'm showing my prowess as being a light, I almost said light ammo hunter, but you're getting more to tools that match your environment, it made sense with this Predator. It didn't take any of the gravity away from him as a true Predator, at the archetype of a Predator, not just the character name, title, blah, blah, blah. It gave presence as well as... It made him more, a little more scary, because I think that was the biggest thing that we had talked about, especially at the beginning, Spencer, where you're like, why aren't these people dead in the first 5 minutes? Yeah. Like, if it was the 87 Predator had shown up there, everyone would be dead. Like, there's no question. Like, I was waiting.
Would they, though?
See, I was waiting, to be very honest, for Naru to go back to the village and it's completely obliterated, because I didn't know, aside from cloaking and then his little pew-pew darts, which were really fun.
Pew-pew darts.
His pew-pew darts. I didn't know what type of tech this particular Predator had in relation to the one that I had seen in 87. And so I was like, oh, if this is like the 87 Predator, then everybody's dead, like from the jump. So I think it's not a de-evolution. It was making it so this Predator matched the environment, which feels kind of akin to something that, and even if we're like an advanced species, would kind of do. Like, you bringing a knife to a gun, or bringing a gun to a knife fight, you're automatically going to win. And if Predator lore serves me right for the vague bit I know, it's not only about the experience, but it's about the hunt itself and being matched by the most, what is it like, the most pivotal prey or opponent that you can find.
What frame of mind are you talking about? Because in the first original two Predator movies, the Predator is drawn to conflict. He's drawn to warring peoples, I guess. Because in the first film, he's drawn to the conflict that's happening in the middle of the jungle. In the second one, he's drawn to the massive gang wars happening in L.A. It isn't until Predators that the idea for abducting the greatest warriors from different planets and so forth and having them be hunted by the Predator or Predators, those are two different mindsets. So, because even then, I believe it's the conflict that the Predator misrepresents in the 2018 one, that he lands where those military personnel are having, because you remember at the beginning of the 2018 one, they're having like this mock battle simulation type thing with like paint guns or whatever. I don't know if you recall, Spencer. I'm talking to you.
Again, no, I remember the two things. I stated them at the beginning. That's all I remember.
See, and then if we're looking at this in relation to conflict, the era or the year that this movie is set is like 1716. Like, it's early 1700s, but it's still slightly towards the middle. And if we're looking at the Comanche Wars, which took place between 1706 and until like the 1870s, you're looking at that kind of space, which would make sense to have a predator show up if we're going on that line of thought that they have to show up because of conflict. Like, I don't know.
Well, yeah, and mind you, you're right.
What?
You're right.
Oh, shoot, Spencer. I get a star in my review this week.
She gets a whole dollar in her bucket this week.
I'm getting money.
So it's there's not really a solid framework for how or why the predators choose. All we know is that they are driven by the hunt, and they are driven to hunt the most dangerous of entities. Whether or not if it's people who are warring with each other, people who are showing that they can be menacing and dangerous, or even creating their own battle zone with the strongest warriors of different clans, so to speak, or tribes brought to another planet, or creating that themselves with xenomorphs in a ancient civilization temple-esque pyramid underground in the Antarctic. Whatever it may be, there's a lot of different variations on the story, on the lore itself. There's no true raw formula that really kind of unites all of them, other than they are driven by the hunt, plain and simple. So looking at it in that aspect, I don't know what about what was going on during this time period that drew them in, other than just scouting for the most strongest entities, which makes sense since he is scanning for, or he's scanning the individual predators that are going on throughout beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. And then kind of taking reference, if you will, with his HUD display of all the different human predators that are there as well. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping that they build off of that mindset, but that doesn't mean to say that and I'm just thinking about this right now. It doesn't mean to say that the one that we did see was a de-evolved one, as it is to say he's actually just a lower class, maybe, predator who is meant to be just a scouter, not meant to fully engage with the actual life forms on the planet.
What if, Spencer, hear me out on this.
Okay.
What if he's just grinding?
What?
What if it's just a big video game to him and he is low level, he's a level one, and he's gone to the fields, and he's
Amy literally just looked up this word probably on her phone. So.
Are you kidding? I know.
So it's like...
But do you see what I mean?
I see what you mean.
Right? Like, once you kill enough bunny rabbits, you can maybe go after, like, the fox. And once you kill a couple of foxes, you're ready for, like, you know, a boar.
Is this, like, you pulling your knowledge from reading Ready Player One and, you know, what's his name?
No,
Percival doing
from,
all the little things.
Sword Art Online, thank you, sir.
Oh, okay.
I was just thinking about it.
Yes.
Regarding the actual performers of the movie, because... The Predator, obviously, he is a killer. He's somebody that we've seen in likeness with another film. So we get an idea of what his drive is. And mind you, this Predator is just as cunning, if not just as ruthless, as all the ones we've seen prior to. However, the individuals in this movie, so the actors, the performers, the woman who plays Naru, Amber Midthunder, mm-hmm. is phenomenal in this movie.
Yes.
I really do appreciate her role, her ability to do the work, because it looks like a lot of the things that she does, mind you, there is some CG work and all that, but it does look like she could probably do a lot of those things. Her ability to translate, like, that struggle, even as a woman in that type of environment. And I do appreciate how they don't make, for the main characters that are tied to this character, I really appreciate that they don't make their efforts with her to be demeaning. Like, I feel like her brother,
Tabe, which you know is Dakota Beavers.
He does an exquisite job in this role, and that's probably part of the writing. But his role in this movie was so well thought out. In terms of, it was never like, you can't do this, you just need to stay home. It was, you'll find your time, you'll have your chance. It was still in a supporting way, but also not diminishing the protocol and the routines of the tribe itself.
Well, in juxtaposition, talking about this actor, Dakota Beavers, Tabe, mm-hmm. who I absolutely, like, he was one of my favorite characters. This is his first acting gig, like his first major acting
really?
Gig. Yeah.
That's surprising.
Like, right? He's been, I think I was reading like his IMDb and he was like, he's been a musician since he was 13, but this was like his first big acting role. And in juxtaposition to Amber Midthunder, who has been in a good chunk of stuff since 2001 for film and since like 2012 moving up. Also, she's slated to be Princess Yue for the new Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh, okay.
So Spencer made a face. We'll think about it. We'll think about it.
You're talking about the new series.
The new series. Okay. Yeah. So Spencer's like, I'm not, but you know what? At least we have somebody that's closer in relation to that. But so
small steps.
And that's something actually, there was an interview I was reading about representation. And it mattering, and one of the producers, so Dakota Beavers, I believe, is part Apache, and then Amber Midthunder is Sioux, and then a lot of the other actors and actresses in this are First Nations, but there's a producer that's Comanche, and they specifically went and she looked for Native tribe members to come in and actually do the work. And Dakota was saying that he wanted to ensure that when he was speaking Comanche, he sat down, they had a translator, he would sit with the translator and work to make sure that the words were coming across in a way that was not only respectful, but celebrated their, not only their history, but like who they are, because it's so ingrained in them. Which is really cool to see that this, like, everybody in here acts really, really well. Like, there is literally, I cannot choose a favorite, because even the mom.
Like, no, she's barely in this movie, and she's still great.
And she was delightful. Or the war chief, which is like, he's in there literally for like a couple of seconds. And it's never felt, this movie did not feel like there were throwaway characters. Mm-hmm. Even in facing the predator, like it's
okay for me. After Amber Midthunder as like one of my favorite people, my next favorite actor in this is Coco.
Yes, Coco.
Sorry,
and mind you, he's not saying that because there was no one else good in the movie.
But I to love say that dog
that, and the crazy thing about the dog is he has no prior film experience. The dog is Coco was literally adopted 2 months prior, worked with a trainer that entire time, and showed, you know, just came to the movie ready to go.
Yeah, that's so crazy to me that, like, so, like, for a lot of, like, you know, people and dogs apparently, that, like, this is their first time acting. They did a fantastic job.
Right?
Yeah. It's so good. The animals seem to be. Kind of reflecting back on the whole Ezra Miller thing, the animal actors in most movies seem to behave better than most adult actual human actors, but that's neither here nor there. But no, the way this dog worked and the way the dog just seemed, and I guess it applies here, but like just so professional, really does, you know, kind of put a shine not only on the ability of animals in film, but the best way to represent them in films as well. So
yeah, and considering that Coco is a rescue, that just, like, that's the extra bonus points for me. This is somebody took the opportunity and not only said, didn't go, oh, this dog is going to be perfect for my movie, it's, this is the dog I want for my movie, and I am making sure you come and hang out. Like, Coco, I'm so proud of Coco.
Yeah.
What about you? Did you have any actors or performers that you're just like, oh, this got me in the sweet, sweet acting nuggets?
Well, I mean, I did mention about Amber Midthunder, mm-hmm. but also the guy who played the Predator itself, Dane DeLiegro, he does a really great job. Now, he's not as tall as the first Predator. I believe he's like about a foot shorter, maybe a foot and a half.
This is probably a junior grade Predator.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Predator Junior?
That's what I'm saying. He was probably like a lower tiered Predator who's just meant to go scout. Because he was a lot skinnier as well. But the mannerisms, the way he did like the walk, the way he showed like the anger and everything, I feel like he did a great job emulating that first Predator. And we've had a slew of different types of Predators throughout the course of time. And some may say, well, they all look the same. They all act. No, they don't all look the same, and they all don't act the same. Some people ham it up more. Some people are a little bit more stiff with it. This particular performance, I felt, really did emulate not only a, if you want to call it that, like a devolved variation of the fighting ability of the mm-hmm. Predators, but also it showed some of the highlights of what the Predators relied on as part of their repertoire, and highlighting that in terms of like, okay, he realized if his shooter or his blaster, so to speak, weapon is in his helmet, then it can get knocked off and used against him. So that's why they transition to a shoulder mount kind of thing. Like, that makes sense, you know, in that aspect. So Dane did a great job, and I really appreciate that in the film. I do have to say, and it is still my biggest gripe knowing it, is that the practical effect work they did with that mask and the actual Predator mask. So we posted on the Instagram page for the film Lostverse the original shot of what it looked like when they were shooting the practical effects scenes, and it looked great. Like, it looked fantastic, and I don't know why they transitioned over to CG. It is one of my biggest gripes in the industry. Filmmakers, or not filmmakers, but even studios, choosing to throw away great practical effect work in the scenes to replace them with CG. And mind you, if you're going to already pay the money to have it in there and do all that, just leave it in there. It's fine. You know, it looked great. So it's the 2011s or 2012s, The Thing all over again. And it is troublesome because I'm a huge proponent for practical work. If you can make it real on film, you know, and as much as it is a little bit more costly, it also adds more impact and punch to the scene itself when done right. Obviously, we have a lot of backyard home video folks who try to make their own movies, and they put in certain scenes that are like, oh, it's practical effect work, and it's a cardboard cutout of something. Like, we do not need another Game of Death type of thing where you're going to cut out, you know, Bruce Lee's face to put it on something. We don't need that. But honestly, I feel like he still did a great job. The actor who portrayed him did a great job. He was phenomenal in emulating that and creating that base foundation for what we were to see in the next follow-up in that chronological order. Did you guys have any other concerns or issues or highlights with the movie?
Spencer, do you have anything?
I think my highlight of this movie is that this movie didn't let anything go to waste. Like, pretty much anything that, like, came up that, like, the movie spent some time on had a purpose to it. And, like, I really did enjoy, like, you know, like, you know, she fell into, like, this pit, like, at one part, and then, like, that pit came back near the end of the movie. And I was like, that's how you get everything to reconnect. And I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my highlight for it.
Ames?
Highlight for me was embracing the landscape. Even at home, it felt larger than life.
Yeah.
It felt majestic. There was such a groundedness that was palpable that made it, it drew me in. And like Spencer said, nothing went to waste. There was not a dropped shot. There wasn't a missed moment. There wasn't anything that I was like, well, you know, we're going to talk about continuity errors and blah, 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 blah. Like, we can. But it truly felt like a movie that I would not mind watching it on the big screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and it what and for me, it was thrilling without being like ultra scary too.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was such a good and fun turn for me, being somebody that does not like to be scared often. What about you, Eddie?
One of the biggest things that I love that a franchise film will do is give homage to its predecessors. And this movie did that on several occasions. Whether if it's highlighting like, oh, she's going into the pit covered in mud, that's an homage to when, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger did that.
Oh, you know? That one had me like, stop moving so much, girl. Please, you're going to drown. But yeah, there was, oof.
You
if
also,
it bleeds.
If, yeah. The whole homage to if it bleeds, it can die.
We can kill it.
That homage to the first one as well. The homage to the second one with the pistol that the Frenchman gives to Naru that has Raphael Adelini, 1715, is the same pistol that the Predator gives to Danny Glover at the end of the second Predator movie when he kills the Predator in his own ship. It's like the same as same instance is kind of like in Alien versus Predator. The other warrior predators come about and they're like, oh, you bested him here. And they give him that pistol.
And that's a fun comic book fact, actually, from 1996, if we want to talk about that pistol.
What happens with the pistol?
So because the Predator line did continue much longer in Dark Horse, the story that that pistol actually comes from is Predator 1718, where... Raphael, I can never pronounce your last
Adelini.
Name.
Adelini.
Is a captain, a pirate captain of all things. And he's facing a mutiny from his crew because of some stolen gold. So he's literally fighting them on an island. He's fighting them off. And a watching predator happens to see this and decides to join the fray. So he's going around killing, which is totally out of character for predators, killing the crew members, and he's fighting back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And then what ends up happening is he turns around seeing that
Raphael Adelini?
The Adelini, sorry. My brain went to a completely different word and it's not right. But he sees Adelini, he decides he's going to fight him. Adelini goes to fight him with his sword and surprised one of the members on the pirates on the floor is still alive. And so he kills Adelini with Adelini's pistol. And the Predator is super pissed off because, of course, he does not get his prize of fighting and claiming it. So he kills the other pirate and takes the pistol, leaves his extendo spear, and, like, leaves. So there's, like, a couple of years miscontinuity, but it still makes sense.
I mean, it's a fun little interjection.
It's, you know, like super minute.
And the odd thing is that, I mean, nowadays comic books have a little bit more extensive integration with the films because there's still a more likeliness that they'll explore that in the films. Wiping that away with this story, I think, adds a little bit more fun and uniqueness because, like we said, as the movie continues, you know, we get that end credit animation scene where it's done in the art style of like how wall art was depicted on stones and on cave walls by the Native Americans of the time. And we see where these three ships show up. That could allude to either a, I don't know, something to the effect of a war, if you will, or it could lead to the idea that the warrior chief from the Predators comes down and in a show of peace probably exchanges one of their spears for the gun, which is why they have it and they're able to give it to Danny Glover. There's a lot of ideas and theories, but I love how much this movie draws itself to recognizing those that go before it in that effort. And it does bring me to our roundtable question, which I do have a unique one for you guys. So the big question that has come about as a result of this film is people spitballing for other quote unquote period predator movies.
Hey,
so
period movies.
The question for this table is, what would you pitch as your idea for the next period predator piece? I.e. maybe like feudal Japan or the Civil War or the Dark Ages. What would you say would be a fun next excerpt or next chapter for the Predator franchise in this same arena?
Like serious or just to get a rise out of Spencer?
Whatever works for you.
Okay, so I have two, but I'll save my get a rise out of Spencer because both you and I would have the same opinion of this. So the first one that I actively think would
Wait, first one, how many do you have?
Just two.
Okay, go ahead.
Two.
Okay, I'm just checking.
So first one that I would really like to see is the ancient Egyptians versus Predator, because even if they were able to kill them, the mummification process or them believing they're a god, like they're gods, would be really crazy interesting to see. And I think I saw it somewhere on like online, someone was saying it could be the mummy except it's Predator, so rethink the mummy but with Predator.
Get Brendan
Fraser to come back through. So that's the first one.
Hold on though, you know it'd be really crazy if they did that and then there's a group, like say it's during the early years of the Egyptian culture and like super early, and they recognize the Predator as a god and he gets caught in this like massive firestorm, whoever he's facing, and he ends up getting killed by fire, and when they retrieve the body his head looks like the head of a jackal, so they praise him as Anubis.
Yep.
And he becomes the Anubis god.
See,
that would be cool. Just saying.
So, and then for the one,
you're welcome,
the one that is super ridiculous and it is the dumbest answer I could come up with.
Oh boy.
It's Predator versus dinosaurs, and we bring in Chris Pratt.
Why?
Because
even I'm like,
exactly, because Spencer laughed, and for some reason you still didn't get. It's a joke. Nobody wants to see that. The dinosaurs
when it comes,
deserve better.
Predator's gonna come up to him, and Chris Pratt's gonna go, "Hold back, hand out,
with stop
with
hand.
His hand out,
stop hand." Oh,
and then,
it's so
and then
dumb.
The Predator grabs his knife and just.
He doesn't even do that. He just looks at him and Chris Pratt starts peeing his pants.
Spencer, what about you?
See, this is hard because I feel like you can't just do a period piece anywhere.
Yep.
Because it's going to just be this movie again. And then it's going to go end up being like what we're talking about. Like, yeah, you could do Japan. You could do your idea with ancient Egypt. And I think those would both work really well. But like, I also feel like the Civil War is not far enough away from this, and I feel like would also kind of a little bit tread on where this movie is, because like there wasn't that much progress, I feel like, for humans between 1700 and 18 something. Like, yeah, trains, okay, cool. Unless you're gonna mow down a predator with a train, which is,
yeah, why not? You never know.
I feel like emotion. The predator should be able to hear that coming.
You also think you'd get a jetpack by then.
Yeah, like, unless you're doing, like, a weird movie where, like, I don't know, the Predator's, like, Jack the Ripper in London, just, like, offing people at nighttime.
Dude, that is
Spencer,
brilliant.
That's a good one.
Spencer, that's brilliant. Especially with this little schlick, like...
Schlick.
Like,
What if the police have just been reporting that it was, like, expertly done by Jack the Ripper, who may have had medical knowledge, like, you know, doctoral knowledge... And it was actually like a bloodbath, and it was the Predator walking around in a top hat.
A Predator in a top hat.
Spencer?
The top hat.
Yeah.
The
top hat. And a monocle.
And his little swishy cape. And then all of a sudden, all you see is like, "Hey, you, what are you doing down there?" And all he does is he looks up and he makes the clicky noise, and then boom. He just cloaks himself and he goes away, but you feel the swishy.
Which is why he was never caught.
The cloak, it's also part of that invisibility. So he like turns dramatically, flare, and he just goes invisible.
Yes.
Spencer found it. You found it, Spencer. Predator Jack the Ripper.
That'd be cool.
You better bring it. We've got really good ideas. I have garbage
right now. Because honestly, like the only thing I could think of was because we had a really great short glimpse of this in a Guillermo del Toro movie, I would like to see to incorporate a little bit more minority perspectives, have him be a part of the Spanish Revolution, where the people versus the state is mm-hmm. pretty much the way that war went. And you have the people fighting against the predator, because the predator just annihilates the entire Spanish army. So you have the people who are the ones who are trying to fight it. And I think that would just be a cool perspective to have. Not to mention, you have an opportunity to do the whole movie in Spanish. So, hey. But my ridiculous one would have to be the predator versus the Crusades, and the predator is essentially the evil that they're trying. It's not Muslims that you're trying to kill. It's just that history got it wrong.
It was actually the Ottoman Empire. It's literally just one predator in the middle of a field mm-hmm. with a million, like, clad in full armor with their shiny white smocks
or
coming at
you. Small grouping of the predators, and they're just wiping the whole floor with all of these thousands of, you know, Crusaders for Christ kind of thing. I'm just saying.
All I'm thinking of is the Children's Crusade now. Man, this is not making me happy. I'm just like the little children are like, hi.
Although,
I have a sword.
But I think if I were to pick one, I would have to pick Spencer's Jack the Ripper Predator. It's
brilliant.
It just works. So.
I have to have my ridiculous one now because I just thought of it.
Okay.
It's so stupid.
Not a top hat stupid.
No, this is even worse. It's so stupid. Okay. So, mm-hmm. it's Predators versus the Real Housewives.
No one is
Well,
safe.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to...
Wait, which set of Real Housewives, though? Or
whichever
is it just
one,
the collection?
Get all of them.
It's
Housewives. Like the Avengers.
I was going to say Housewives Queens? Assembled.
Housewives Assembled!
I have a friend who's locally here. She used to be a DP. She used to be a DP, and she did an actual movie here, a short film called The Real Housewives of Sacramento. That's literally all I'm thinking about is like my friend Melissa and her group going and joining the other housewives.
I mean, that's like if you gave opportunities for any moms to come through and it's moms versus predators.
You're right, Spencer. That was horrible.
It's so good, though.
So stupid.
Wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about does the film pass or fail and how many monocles. I want to start with Amy.
So, of course, this movie passes for me. If you can't tell, I'm actually excited about this movie. It not only gives a great new space for lore, but it totally gives honor to the people that were here long before we showed up. Great art. It's great piece of art. I enjoy it. It's a great intro into the franchise. And this is the first one of 3 weeks. I'm giving it a 5 out of 5. Mockles.
Ah, there you go. Spencer.
This movie passes for me. It's extremely well done. It kind of really took me by surprise with how good it was. And, like, you know, it was a diverse cast. I was really excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm just really happy that, like, they executed that and, like, it really went well.
They didn't M. Night Shyamalan this.
I know. M. Night Shyamalan, take notes for your next
Who's
movie.
Who's a person of color? You would think.
I know. It's so crazy. It doesn't make any sense. But we're not talking about him anymore.
We're not talking about him. Yeah.
Yeah, great job all around. 5 out of 5.
There you go. As for myself, this film passes. I love the aspect of taking a period in history and applying the one of the most deadliest hunters in all of the galaxy, the Predator, also known as the Yutja. They incorporate that into the storyline, and I love that. I absolutely really did appreciate this film and its inclusivity and diversity. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. I appreciated a lot of parts about it. There were some parts, the practical work really does, or the lack of, really does take a toll in terms of how I see it. And I'm hoping that as we continue down the road, more people recognize practical effect work is just the way to go. So 4.5 out of 5. Check it out if you haven't. It is on the streaming platform Hulu, wherever people have it. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com, where we got over 300 episodes, allegedly. Everything from romance, action, comedy, everything you're looking for in movie talk, we have it there. Check it out, filmlosophers.com. Also, check us out on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. We post there as often as we can. We got some fun stuff, including that clip we were talking about where we show the actual practical effect work of this film, and so many others. So check it out, filmlosophers. Filmlosophers on Facebook and Filmlosophy 101. Also, you can check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, where you can get listen to several episodes, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. I'm getting little symbols to make sure I remember. You can tune into wherever your heart's desire is to listen to our show. We are at The Filmlosophers. Give us a subscribe. If you like what you're listening to, give us a 5-star review. We do appreciate it. We are looking forward to the next few months, as we're going to be diving into a couple more unique films this month. And then coming into September, we have a special month where Spencer is going to be taking over the show with his knowledge of a certain fandom that he has. Yes. So that'll be interesting. Stay tuned for more. We are excited to showcase his ever-loving space knowledge, and that's the only hint I'm going to give you. So we want to thank you, everyone, for listening. We appreciate you being a part of the show. And so from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.